we'd like to open up the floor to just a general question. So when you give your question, just please introduce yourself, your affiliation, and maybe your major at the university, just so we can get a better perspective of your background.
Juan Cuello Vaquero from Argentina, Richmond, University. And I have two questions. One to Arulo. Do you know how many countries still in the world keep use sanguinis as a means to obtain nationality instead of use solis? Mm-hmm. Because even Germany, who has a strong policy against the descendants of Germans in Russia, for example, they were second class at the time, they have changed their policy, and a person who is born in Germany is now a citizen. So how many countries, except Japan, are still keeping use sanguinis instead of use solis? Because that's part of the problem. If you learn the language, if you know the customs, even if you do your trust correctly in Japan, and if you don't have nationality, you are still a second-class person. No matter how many laws are there, if you're not a citizen, you're a second-class person.
Just want to collect questions all around so we can get lots of people's comments. And
the second question is for Professor Yasushi Katsuna. How to solve the gap between all these discussions in Geneva and the discussions in the government with the daily-based activities. For example, when is the police the one that is doing the harassment all the time against the foreigners? How do you solve that? I mean, I'm tired of the police harassing me every time that I come out of the supermarket. But can I do a case against the police because the police are harassing me? I mean, they are doing something that is legal. And I should be very legal, probably, but when I show my guy which in Takura show, they say, oh, sumimasen. But the embarrassment of being harassed all the time in the same place with my neighbors who see me and then are going to deal with me in the elevator and they don't want to take the same elevator that I take. How you solve that? So until the United Nations finally will take a point on this, until when the government is going to do something, how you solve the harassment of daily basis, the people that change seats on the train, the people that like Shinjuku with this, if you see a suspicious person, call 1110, keep Shinjuku clean. Not only you are a problem, you are dirty. So, I mean, how do you keep a solution to this gap?
Anybody else?
I have a couple of comments and short questions. First of all, actually, a comment toward Arudo. In fact, you made a connection between government policies and the volume of immigration, and indicating that probably kind of affects Japan's economic growth potentially.
Yes.
But Gracia Liu Ferrer, I'm a sociologist of international migration. So according to sociological perspectives of international migration will not be affected by a government policy as much as by economic gaps between countries and social networks. So I think given Japan's, the fact that Japan has already opened some doors, and it doesn't matter if it's back doors or side doors, as long as some doors are open and the channels are open and the social networks have already been established, the volume of migration would not be that severely affected by the government. That's something government doesn't know or does not want to admit, but immigrants are coming in. So probably there's a little comment to the kind of a point in your presentation. And also the other comment toward both of you is that basically I think as a foreigner and as an immigrant, as a person who's actually harassed by a cop sometimes, I feel strongly about racial discrimination in Japan. However, I choose Tokyo over Chicago, New York, or Miami anytime. Because there are some good aspects of living in Tokyo, and even including government's policies. Like my daughter is 100% insured, health insurance is 100%, all those kind of good benefits. So when we make a case, probably we can both appeal and attack. Instead of attacking the bad points, I think this is very important. Instead of just picking out the bad things, attacking the government, we can probably try to appeal as well, affirming the good points and pointing out the bad, insufficient points. And because by just attacking the Japanese people, the Japanese government is alienating. And also, it's alienating for, I'm Chinese and I study Chinese immigrants in Japan, and alienating among Chinese immigrants too, because a lot of Chinese immigrants actually side with Japanese government. So if you want to do mobilization, probably just instead of including, you should both kind of differentiating the immigrant population with a lot of high-skilled professionals and the low-wage migrant workers. In fact, in the Chinese immigrant community, probably more kind of towards skilled part than the lowest wage migrant part. So it kind of this discourse might be alienating in the immigrant community as well. So if we appeal and attack at the same time, it might be more effective. And the short question is, so how do the public respond to the lunatic governor or the officials' comments on foreigners? Those are outrageous, and I think in every country there are outrageous people making that kind of outrageous comments, even Harvard president. So people respond strongly and even, you know, kind of force somebody to quit or something. So I wonder how the public respond to that kind of comments. Thank you.
I'm Glenda Roberts from GSAPS. Thanks for a great presentation, everyone. It was really interesting. And I just have a couple of comments. One is for Arudo Behito-san. And that is, when you mentioned the MOJ policy on abolishing the system as it currently stands for the Kenshusei, Sindino Jishusei, actually, I think there is a positive side to that one. As you just have mentioned, what are the positives? There is a positive side, and that is that, as far as I understand it, they want to make at least a bona fide guest worker system to replace it, so that these workers would come in and be under the labor standards law. Because as it is right now, for the first year of the trainee system, you're not under the labor standards law, and your pay is extremely low. So at least their proposal would recognize, you know, that people are working, they're not being trainees, and that they should be under the labor standards law. So for that, I applaud them. You know, there are many other things, perhaps, that you don't want to applaud them for, but that is, at least they're calling a spade, and I think that's a first step, and a positive step. And the other thing is, I think your idea of advertising positive aspects of foreigners residing in Japan is a wonderful idea. And, you know, this should be embraced by the government. Wouldn't it be great to see a poster at a train station proclaiming, you know, that so-and-so is making such wonderful contributions to our society, and that person, you know, is a foreigner resident in Japan. That would be fantastic. And it's also something that you would think we could get some government bureaucrats to get on board. You know, yeah, that they might possibly be willing to do that. So I think that's a fantastic suggestion.
Just add a quick comment. In fact, when I do field work among Chinese immigrants, a lot of professors and highly skilled professionals, they complain that people always equalize immigrants to low-wage workers. They want to, you know, have good portrayers of immigrants. So if we can, you know, emphasize that aspect, that would be great.
Other questions, comments?
Yes. I'm Danish from GSAPS, PhD student here. I just got a general comment. I mean, as Professor Katsuma said, there is a shortage growing of workers, both skilled and unskilled, in developed countries. And then the movement is coming basically from developing countries. So almost all countries I see face a problem of socialization. The problem of socialization has become so difficult that Europe is blaming America, America is blaming Europe, and Japan is looking at German standards. Who's going to take the lead and find out a nation, because you're talking about globalization. Maybe this is too general, but then I just want to make a comment. So maybe we're talking about a mono-ethnic kind of state that that started from the Industrial Revolution, and we're still stuck up with that. We're not being able to progress new ideas, or we're taking great strides in technology, but we're not taking great strides in sociology. We're not being able to accept people as maybe they could come. I mean, yes, there are lots of people coming from China or coming from Korea to Japan. Yes, they have different culture. Yes, they look at things differently. They eat differently. They do everything differently. Yes, so they can be discriminated. But then, they are sooner or later going to become a part of the system because they're required here. 500,000 people, whatever the estimates are, the people are required every year. We have to start preparing for that socially. Somehow there is, not only Japan, I mean, all the other countries too. Somehow I find this weakness globally of this kind of complex that countries have, and other countries fighting for their employees, like China fighting for their country, Indians, I don't know, it just goes on. So I just wanted to hear your comments on this. Thank you.
Well, I have a question for actually three speakers, but thank you very much for your presentations today. I thought the concentration of both, all the negatives of, in particular, the negative human rights abuses in Japan to be, of course, I understand that they exist, but I wonder if the human rights violations is the problem, but where does that problem resolve? And if we look at the United States, we have the famous broadcaster Lou Dobbs. He's just anti-immigrant, anti-immigrant, anti-immigrant. And you hear the United States election right now is the major candidates are trying to avoid the issue of immigration, but it's there. There's a tendency a trend in the country to be anti-immigrant, and this, in that process, violating the rights of those immigrants. In Australia, we had Pauline Hanson. In Canada, we have anti-immigrant the Canadian Alliance Party, which is not anti-immigrant, but trying to control the number of immigrants coming in. Singapore's instituted laws to ensure that the domestic workers that come in, they have to get AIDS tests. They have to be, I think it's monthly or semi-annually, pregnancy tests to ensure that they're following the laws. Is it a human rights issue, or is there something more fundamental? Is it a xenophobic trend going across the world, or something else? Maybe we'll ask you to answer some of those questions, and then we can pick up some more questions.
In fact, although Japan has a lot of very serious human rights abuse for racial discrimination, however, this semester I am teaching a class on social stratification at Sophia University, and for my students, they do as Kawakami-san sensei mentioned, that students or people in general are not aware of racial discrimination or that sort. But when I actually start analyzing Japanese society, I do realize in this society we do have fewer issues than places like the United States, which has such overt and serious racial issues. So sometimes you should give some thoughts, or correctly worded. We do need to take into consideration the fact that Japan probably does have slightly fewer racial issues than some other countries. So there's fewer overt issues than other countries. That probably explains people's ignorance or of that kind.
I have a short comment.
Okay, another comment.
Okay. No, following what Professor Robert said, in my field work, I do field work with Brazilians in the Canto region. And in one of the places that I go, a woman that I interview, her son, graduated from a school here that is an ethnic school. And he decided to go to a medical school in Brazil and has to give an exam in the university in Brazil. He got top grades in the exam. So the university in Brazil sent a letter to the school here in Japan saying that they are so surprised that being in a foreign country, he can pass the top standards of education in Brazil. And wouldn't it be wonderful that our school should get recognition and should get funds and more children could be educated instead of blaming them for not learning Japanese all the time? Could it be wonderful that more people know that they are going to be more professionals, even when they are Brazilians, that they have the same genetic and skills that other people? Because sometimes I feel that if you are not from a certain race, like the comment about the black people, you are lesser. And it happens all the time with people. They see your face and they mistreat you as mentally challenged sometimes. So wouldn't it be wonderful to educate people to know that it's just a human being thing and not depends on the color of your skin or your face or where you come from, how you can make a contribution. So I don't know, it could be very idealistic, but I think that it could be a challenge. But when my colleagues at Sofia University, sometimes I talk about these things, they say, what is xenophobia? And I said, well, when you say that some people act because it's fear of, it's afraid of foreigners, that's precisely the definition of xenophobia. If you don't know that basic thing, how you can address things in your own society?
Thank you very much for interesting comments. I don't think I can respond to all of the questions, but let me try to say a few things. First, when we talk about globalization, money flows across the border, I'm talking about capital, information, and goods. But when it comes to labor, we have controlled mechanism. And if we look at the history of Europe, it took a few decades for them to allow people to move beyond borders. And now they are going to, Turkey is going to be part of the EU, and they are very much worried about this process, Europe in the past, the EU in the past has been quite homogeneous in a sense that culturally, religiously, but now Turkey is coming in. I think it will, it will be a bit different now. So when we talk about Asia, we have more differences in this region. So I think it will be a challenge for us to allow labor to move freely in this region. It will take time, but I think we cannot stop it. So that's my first point. Second point, in responding to your question, in Geneva, we talk about long-term policy changes, and we cannot stop harassment by policemen every day. What we can do here is, if it's about systematic harassment by police, we have to talk to the police. They should come up with the guidelines about harassment. In the universities, in the past, we denied there was any sexual harassment or power harassment. There were no guidelines. But now we have something. It's not perfect, but we have guidelines against sexual harassment, power harassment. So there has been some improvement. Why can't we do it? Why can't we do it for the police department? We should propose that they need the guidelines against harassment, any kind of harassment, not just harassment against foreigners, but harassment against women, harassment against disabled persons. I think it's important when we engage in a social movement, we should expand our networks rather than we just international students coming close. You can make a case, but why don't we expand our partnership? There are people, socially vulnerable people, socially exclusion in Japan, and we can make partnership with them. Next point. Stereotype. We need a role model. we have many superstars here, right? So we should break this role, stereotype. So we need role models. To break the stereotype, we need good social science, as Dikita-san said. I think that's where we come in. We are at the universities. We are good at analyzing data. We are good at doing qualitative analysis. Crime rates are higher for foreigners. Is that really true? If you include the illegal residents in Japan, yes, maybe. But if you exclude that, if you talk about crimes, real crimes, I'm talking about crimes, that rates are higher for Japanese. So
people manipulate data. So we academics should look at the data and try to dispute. We shouldn't allow the stereotype to flourish in the newspapers. We should do good statistical analysis. And lastly, Japan is a member of the United Nations Human Rights Council. Yes, we know that. Japan is proud to be a member of the Human Rights Council at the United Nations. So we have to encourage the Japanese government to do a better job. When I was in Mexico, I was working for child protection, and my job was to protect children from Central America, people trafficked from Central America, Guatemala, to Mexico, from Mexico to the U.S., to pick strawberries, right? To work in the plantations. At the beginning, when I was there in the 1970s, in the late 1970s, the Mexican government denied there was any child labor in the country. They didn't recognize that it existed. And they didn't even want to sit with the Mexican NGOs. So that's how we have to, we have to play a broker role to allow Mexican NGOs to engage in discussion, dialogues with Mexican government. Initially, we talked about inviting an expert from Argentina, but the Mexicans didn't like the idea. Later, we talked about inviting American professors and experts to Mexico. They didn't like the idea. You know why? They don't want to be preached by Americans. So at the end, we had to invite someone from Thailand, from Chulalongkorn University. It worked quite well. Actually, it was Professor Vijit Muntapong of Professor of Law School. Currently, he used to be special reporter for commercial sexual exploitation of children, and more recently, he was special reporter for human rights situations in North Korea. So we know him quite well. And he was here last week. And so we probably have to, to be strategic. How can we engage in dialogues? Okay, if you go to the government and they just send you very junior officers who don't want to say anything, who don't want to make any commitment, how can we talk to the senior officers? We have to come up with a good strategy to do that.
すいません、いくつか、政治家のゼロフォービアステートメントに対して日本の反応ですけれども、一番オビアスなのは石原都知事がまた都知事になった結果を見ていただければ分かるかなというふうに思います、残念ながら非常に、日本人の反応は鈍いと思います。 それに対してやっぱり日本その、まあ、多分先から渡辺先生みたいになっちゃうかもしれないんですけども、やっぱりそれに対してきちんと一人一人が反応していかない。でマスコミも最近はあまりきちんと書かない、あるいはマスコミが書いても、反応が鈍い。そういう中で政治家がそれを言うことに慣れ、また次の暴言を言うステルメントを作るのに平気になってくるっていうのは最近ちょっと傾向としてはあるかなというふうに思います。それからアメリカなんかと比べて日本は問題が少ないんじゃないかということなんですけども、 NGO の活動の中ではやっぱりそれは別に問題にはならないというか、そのアメリカが少ないからじゃあ日本の中で何もしなくてもいいのかっていうと、もちろんそうではなくて、現に今その目の前に誰かがその人権侵害に遭っている、差別に遭っているという時に我々は何をするのかというのを考えるのは多分シビルソサイティだと思うんですね。ですからその政府は多分そういう考え方かなという気はするんですけれども、その他の国と比べてだからという問題ではなく、今ここの国にあるこの問題をどう解決してどう改善できるのかということをやっぱり常に考えていく必要があるのかなと思います。でそれから研修生、技能実習生で、実は私が個人的にずっとやってるのはその外国人研修生の 問題なんですが、実際相談に乗ったりとか、個別ケースの解決をやってるんですが、まあ、結局研修生の問題がクローズアップされてきて、いくつか政府が案を出しているんですが、今厚生労働省は研修生1年目のインターンの時にも浪費法を適用させようということは言っています。だけどそれはあくまでも厚生労働省の案です、つまりそして経済産業省だとか法務省は研修生は今までの研修生であって、浪費法の適用は必要ないんだと言っています。でこれの結果が出るのはあと1年後ぐらいです。ですので、必ずしもそれがベネフィットになっているかどうかという結論はまだ出せないということです。それから、結局そこまでクローズアップされてきたのはなぜかというと、研修生の問題がですね、やっぱりもう抑えられないほど、研修生たちの抱えている問題が噴出してきたということはやっぱりあると思います。でその中で研修生たちが、強制的に帰国させられたり、いろんなその危険を犯してもその日本社会の中に訴えたいんだと、あるいは自分たちの、給料をもらわなきゃ、腹の虫が下がらんと、そういうようなやっぱりその研修生たちがリスクを犯して外に出てきたというのが、やっぱりそれに対してその日本の社会、日本の市民社会がレスポンドしたというか答えたと、その中でやっぱりその問題がクローズアップしてきた。だからほっとけばおそらく何も出てこなかった。相変わらず彼らは囲い込まれた状態で泣き寝入れをしていたのだろうと私は確信を持っています。それから世界的なゼノフォビアがブームなのか、これはちょっと私はその全ての国のケースがよくわからないんですが、アムネスティなんかの中でもやはり言われているのは全体的な傾向としては非常に強まっているんじゃないかと、やっぱりそれ一つは 9.11 っていうのが一つのきっかけにはなっている。でそれが、テロ対策というのと、日本と全く近いと思うんですが、テロ対策という名前と、それから、やっぱり移住労働者政策、この2つがうまく政府にとっては都合よくマッチングして強化されていったのかなという気は感覚としてはします。ただ、私はそれをつぶさに研究しているわけではないので、それ以上のコメントはちょっとできないんですけれども、そんな感じですね。
Hi, where do I start? I think the first thing that, the first misunderstanding that I would like to dispel, at least in my approach to my research, is not attack. I'm not attacking. The topic of today was to talk about human rights problems and Asian immigration. It's not an attack. And one of the problems with debate in Japan is any criticism of Japan is seen as an attack. Sorry, no. Japan domestically is fair game. It's just the same as any other country is. For criticism when something is being done wrong. And my case today was to show how what things were being done wrong. That's not to say that it's all being done wrong, but here are the problems. Let's fix them, was my point today. And if it turns people off that I'm pointing out problems, I'm sorry. But these are the problems. If you'd like the good news too, give me more time. 20 minutes is not enough. That's the first thing. The second thing is this question about Jusangwe's and Jusoli's. Most countries, in fact all countries, have a hybrid system. It's not completely Jusangwe's, it's not completely Jusoli. There are some cases where there are some exceptions allowed. Japan, according to my research, is more of an outlier on the Jusangwe's front. But there are other countries in Asia which also have a Jusangwe's rule. South Korea does too. And it wasn't until recently, before... for example, children born to Korean women were even given South Korean citizenship. I mean, Japan did away with that in 86. It took a lot longer. I think it took until 99, I think, in South Korea. In other countries, too, China has it as well, for example. But the point is still that other countries, if you want to talk about global trends, if you look at Germany, as you pointed out, other countries are loosening their laws to allow for the exceptions that come around. When you have certain people that don't fall into the nice, clean categories of blood. So I think the global trend is away from Jusangwe's, but Japan is certainly not following that at the moment. But let's do a little meta discussion here about the whole global standards thing, because this is really the bedrock of our argument. Whenever we look at globalization, global standards, who sets those?
It's not really clear. If we look at America, oh, well, America's having a xenophobic wave. They're actually instituting fingerprinting for other people, too. So therefore, other countries might start doing it, too. If you look at Britain, they're bringing it in voluntarily for people that want to go through the border smoothly. Yes. But just because a couple of countries in the world do it doesn't, A, mean it's happening everywhere. It's indicative of a wave. Or, B, that it's justifiable. When we as activists in the activist chair sit there, we don't say, well, this is justifiable because other people are doing it. What's the better way for people to reach a good potential within the society that they live in? That's our chakagante. You know, what will make people live better lives? What will help people to live more successful, more fulfilling lives, as opposed to what's the best way to control or what's the best way to monitor? And I'm afraid the Japanese government, this is not an attack, this is an observation. The Japanese government still has the attitude of not making things easier for non-Japanese to integrate and associate. It's still a matter of policing and control. Where are they going? What are they doing? How are they being illegal or not illegal, sort of thing? And that's what we're talking about at the very beginning, as I said, about, let's talk about the good things too. Don't just attack. There we go. But when you talk about generally in Japan, the rubric is of social control, just about everything. What are people going to do? Especially when you hand over immigration to police forces. The police are always going to look at it from the point of view of, okay, how do we keep order? How do we make sure the laws are being followed? The problem is the rubric is not sort of like, well, foreigners are also legal and are also following the laws too. They focus on the bad things. It's almost constantly an attack. And as our friend here talks about, he is a victim of that attack, unfortunately, but whenever he walks out of the supermarket and the police think, well, he might be a lawbreaker. You have to untie this attitude of making the enforcement of law based upon physical appearance. And there's ways to untangle that, but you have to break out of the whole meta-argument of, A, any criticism of Japan is a bad thing, or it leads to bad things, or B, global standards are encouraging this right now. As researchers, of course, we can only look at the trends and make decisions based upon that. But our steps as activists is to say what is the better path to choose and to give advice. And that, I think, is what our research should also be leading towards, how to nudge things in a more positive direction. Because if you don't, and we just sit here and look back at trends and say, okay, well, things are getting bad, even corporations are talking about some corporate social responsibility. I think there's a certain degree of academic social responsibility we can engage in when we're advising people in these difficult times of globalization to try and find a way that will help make things easier for people to have better lives. Well, that was an essay, wasn't it? The end.
Can I say a few things? The stereotype about so-called foreigners in Japan, I think it's maybe polarized when we talk about Carlos Ghosn. He's admired by many in the business sector. So we have mixed records. And so I think it's probably fair to say that there are many different aspects of, you know, people living, many people, different kinds of people living in Japan. So we probably have to, you know, create more role models in the society to change the perception, so that hoping that people will change their behavior. But at the same time, changing perception, behavior is not going to be easy, and it will take time. So I think, of course, education, in the long run, education is important, but in the short run, or in the medium term, we probably need a rule of law. We need a rule-based society, because, you know, people are feeling very different things during the transition period. So we cannot, you know, count on people's goodwill or the perception changes. We need more rules. Or the guidelines for against sexual harassment or harassment, etc. We probably need rules. Police are infamous about violating human rights everywhere. So yes, so we have to be careful because it's a powerful institution in any society. So I don't have any practical suggestions how to approach the police department, but they should recognize. In many cases, they are very ignorant about many things about discrimination, and they tend to abuse their power. So I think one approach is to encourage them to come up with good guidelines for them not to abuse human rights, violate human rights. We probably have to suggest something. Of course, we have to name and shame them, but at the same time, we have to give them something, some alternative thing to deal with.
Any final questions before we end up? I think we have time for maybe two or three more questions.
Well, actually, I really admire the political activist's job. Actually, the reason I'm here is because I check Aldo's website regularly. And I really think it's really important that we have this voice. I think my comments came mostly from a sociologist perspective, how to mobilize people, to engage people in social movement. It's a pragmatic process. So in order to mobilize as many people as possible, you have to find common ground, to compromise, to affirm their positive aspects instead of alienating their possible allies. So that I think probably attack was a bad word, but I think as a strategy for political activists, you probably have to mobilize as many people as possible to achieve your agenda. I think that was my point.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Of course, you all have to say something more. would it be possible that we use your website, Arudo, to post profiles of people that is doing a good contribution to the society? Could it be possible that we use the Center Aguacera to distribute flyers among the students about students who are doing really great at the university? Could it be possible that Amnesty International used these profiles to pass them to the newspapers? Could it be possible that we start the movement? Because otherwise, it's going to be here in a good conversation that we all have, and then we go for beer, and it's very nice. But society after that continues being society. But can we start the ball rolling and maybe see what happens? Maybe it's just a suggestion.
Just commenting on David.org, which is what you're referring to, of course, and you're welcome to post positive and creative stuff and all that, good news, bad news, whatever news, as long as it's germane to David.org. I'm just one person, though. Everybody else wants to write it and post it and put it up in their name, they're perfectly welcome to. Help yourself. Send it to me, I'll put it up. I do that all the time. Love it.
Well, I think I'll end the evening there. There was a really positive discussion from many different perspectives, from the activist perspective, the NGO perspective, and maybe including the academic perspectives on how we can bridge the or utilize the global standards that are emerging in terms of human rights and connect that to the local problems that we see, whether it's the United States or Canada, and in this case, tonight's discussion, Japan. So maybe Japan's bridge to enhancing or promoting Asian integration is improving its domestic human rights standards and perhaps acting as a leader in that area and using it as a non-political, non-military, non-security related, but very needed policy in the area. So thank you very much to our speakers tonight. Please join me in giving them a hand. And finally, just an announcement, we have two events next month on February 12th. Garcia wants to join us to give us...